Welcome to Behind the Sports Medicine Podcast, the podcast that pulls back the curtain on the evolving world of sports science. I'm Andrew Rizza, an athlete trainer with decades of experience in professional, collegiate, and high school sports.
And I'm Cameron Roth, an orthopedic surgeon and a consultant for the Chicago White Sox.
In each episode, we'll explore the real-world challenges and opportunities facing today's human performance professionals.
Our hands-on experience is transforming sports medicine and breaking barriers through innovation and teamwork.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to this week's Behind the Sports Medicine Podcast. Tonight, we have Charlie Kravitz, a good friend of my co-host, Dr. Cameron Roth. They met each other, from my understanding, when Cam was a sophomore at Vanderbilt. So, Cam, would you mind introducing your very good friend, Charlie Kravitz?
Of course. Absolute honor to introduce my very close friend, Charlie Kravitz. For those of you who don't know him, Charlie is a very prominent ESPN producer, personality on the very well-known Dominique Foxworth Show podcast, former producer for Dan Lebatard on Highly Questionable on ESPN. Charlie is the most knowledgeable person I know about sports, has some of the best opinions and some of the coldest takes ever. But most importantly, he's a great person, one of my closest friends, and it is super fun to have him on to talk and learn from him today. Charlie, what's up?
I am delighted to be here. Just so you know, Andrew, I've been introducing Cam to people as a doctor since he was 20 years old. In multiple situations, don't worry, we have a doctor here. Cameron is here. It's fine.
Yeah. It's funny because when Cam was in medical school, his first or second year, he would call me or text me and say, "Riz, I hurt my wrist. Like, what is it?" And he would like send me a picture or call me. I'm like, "Cam, you're in medical school. Like, you should know this already." He's like, "I haven't gotten to the wrist yet." Now, you got to learn us. Probably giving him false information.
Now you're a big wrist and hand guy. Number one wrist and hand guy in Arizona. Many people are
That's
saying.
Right.
So, Charlie, obviously, you know, Riz said we met at school, but you have really, since we graduated, your career has really skyrocketed in terms of sports media and production. Can you just give us lowdown on where you started, where you were, and how'd you end up where you are now?
Yeah. So, I mean, Cameron knows I wanted to work in sports in some capacity because I'm like probably the biggest, most sports obsessed like dork out there. And I was like, okay, I'm in college. I'm writing my history capstone on economics and baseball. That's as good as an internship. I'll get a job in sports media or working for a sports team. So I graduate college and it is not the easiest field to get into, which is I was slapped in the face with that for the first like 6 months after college. I was like met with a lot of no's, a lot of courtesy interviews from like your parents' friends' friends or your friends' friends who get you in the door. I at one point tried to work for, got like a courtesy interview to try and work for the Houston Astros and talk to their GM right before they had the first pick in the draft and they're going to pick Carlos Correa. And in the interview, it's kind of funny now because I think this is actually the front office that got like banned from baseball or suspended from baseball in retrospect. They're like, "Who would you pick?" And I was like, "Byron Buxton. Absolutely. That's your guy." Yeah. And I think they looked at me like, "All right, this fucking guy, like not hiring him. We're taking Correa with the first pick and not hiring this guy." So I took a job at a private investigator's firm, which is crazy. And I was essentially a research, like I was doing like very baseline research. And, after like 8 months, I quit that job to be an intern for Ride Home Projects. Ride Home Projects is a production subsidiary for ESPN. Eric Ride Home is like the most venerated sports producer. He came up with PTI, Around the Horn, Highly Questionable, and has produced those shows that have sort of exceeded the quality and like credibility of a lot of sports shows that go on for 20 plus years. And, you know, have become like, you know, Tony and Mike are like your TV grandpas talking about sports. So I took an internship to work on Dan Lebatard's show. And my parents were like, "This is sort of nuts, but whatever. It's fine. Like you're quitting a real job to be an intern there." And the fit was just really, really good. So that Highly Questionable is Dan Lebatard, his dad, Bomani Jones at the time. And when I started my internship there, I thought it was going to be like a 3 month internship. And a lot of what it was is essentially just being understanding the internet and the internet sense of humors. And you do a lot of pre-production as an intern, helping build rundowns and show topics that can really hit with Lebatard and his sense of humor. Got hired to be a segment producer about 8 months into an internship that I thought was going to be 3 months. I just never left, just stayed there day after day. And soon after I was hired as a segment producer, the entire staff switched shows to work for Desus and Mero in New York, which was a late night show produced by Ride Home for Vice initially. And I mean, I'm sure you guys realize this. Anytime there's like a huge vacancy in stuff like this, even though the FatCast 25 years old, it just becomes a vacuum where you can take as much work as you want and you can improve as much as you want. You can just dive into those relationships. So I became the coordinating producer of the show, which is essentially you run the day-to-day operations of the show. You pick the rundown, you plan the topic, you make sure taping goes smoothly. We were a post-produced show, so you make sure you hit your 2130. You make sure you hit all of your ad obligations and the topics work, and you have, like, I'd write all the jokes for Dan's dad. I'd write a document of that. Eric Rideholm would go through those, pick the best jokes for Poppy, things like that. And in that time, you know, it's a remote production. So the biggest boost to my career was after, well, one was getting to know Bomani Jones, who's brilliant, but also he moved on to host his own show. And we did a rotating cast of people who were close to my peers, Mina Kimes, Dominique Foxworth, Pablo Torre. And developing a relationship with those people has led to the springboard of producing Dominique's show, working with Mina full-time, seeing what other opportunities could potentially be there for Levitard as he launched his new company. So a lot of it was like, I was grinding, but a lot of it was just really, really lucky timing that I showed up when everyone was leaving to work on a different show.
So what aspects of some of those people you worked with do you think made them successful or unique? You said, you know, we always joke that you say Bomani's a quote genius, but obviously he's a very smart guy, very successful, right? So what are some things that you learned from them, or what are some personality aspects or characteristics from those people that you surround yourself with that's made them so unique and successful?
So I think that, like, production, a lot of it is knowing who you're working with and what they need and being willing to sort of be a chameleon to, like, fill those needs. Like Bomani, he really just wants to talk sports. He wants to talk, and you never need to worry about him getting stuff wrong or him having wrong opinions or him being unprepared, but he wants a producer that has ideas and can stand up and be like, hey, did you think about this aspect X, Y, and Z? Or, like, actually, he wants to just have the conversation before he does the show. Someone like Levitard has this really sardonic sense of humor where you're ending up picking topics. You don't prep Dan, or you didn't for Highly Questionable. He was doing that on his own. It was after his radio show. But you had to have an understanding of, like, here are angles. I can build this straw man, this topic, for Dan to tear it down. He wants to counterpunch and tear down this construct that he thinks is stupid, so it becomes a satire of sports media. With someone like Mina, who's just, like, as good as it comes in football in the industry, I'm never going to tell her something that she doesn't know about, you know, the Seahawks front four or something like this. But it is something that where I think I could stand up and had credibility is, like, here are the topics that I think are going to work for the show today. Do you want to change any of them or this? But I was a proxy for the viewer, because a lot of what production is, and this is something Eric Rideholm says, so I'm not totally plagiarizing it. It's a Venn diagram. Like, you have a circle of the audience, you have a circle of the producer, and you have a circle of the talent. And you're looking for that center of the thing that interests all three of you. And I tend to be more of a proxy for the audience. Like, I tend to think, like, what's going to pop on the internet? What's going to pop on TV? What's more provocative or going to get something that can be really conversational and have two sides? Like, you don't want it to be a yes, no answer where, like, everyone's going to agree. Like, is Tom Brady good? I know Cam will make the joke about Max Kellerman saying Tom Brady fell off a cliff and, like, that's 2017. I did not produce First Take. But, you know, you want there to be two-sided questions. Otherwise, you're setting someone up to be something, say something dumb in the format of debate television, which is how you get Tom Brady fell off a cliff when you're debating whether or not he's good. So it's like, can I format questions that are going to show off her expertise and match it with Dan's sense of humor? And a lot of that just becomes very intuitive. And you learn from the longer you produce someone, the more you know their strengths and their weaknesses and when to hop in, when to feed them a line and the McCurdy in their ear, help them with something that they don't know.
How did we get here? Like, we grew up watching SportsCenter, which was just Stuart Scott doing highlights and saying booyah.
And that's the whole time.
He was amazing. And then we were in college, and that was the beginning of PTI and Around the Horn. And they were pretty playful. But, and now, Charlie, correct me if I'm wrong, but we've sort of entered the First Take times where Skip just blatantly makes things up and to upset people, and Stephen A. Smith just screams.
Love him though.
Possible. But there's also very intelligent people who you have ended up working with. So how have you seen the transformation of sports media and where these things going?
So, I mean, like, I think there's two sports media. So first of all, I'll break that. The first part, like, how I ended up working with those people is, like, I genuinely just kept the people close who I enjoyed being around. I think it's no different than any other job. Like, those are the content that I like to digest from the ESPN talent people I worked with. ended up being the people I continued to book to be on Dan's show. So it was very much a self-fulfilling prophecy. And it's like, it's hard not just like anything. It's like, oh, I believe in this person. This person's closer to my peer. I'm going to put more effort into developing the shows that they're on, things like that. But where did the fissure in sports media happen? So, you know, Skip and Stephen A started there on, I think it was on Cold Pizza, and they had a debate segment that was like completely ridiculous, where they would just, you know, debate if LeBron was good. LeBron versus Jordan or whatever.
LeBron versus Jordan.
Yeah.
To be as old as
Cowboys versus whoever. But I think when they looked at the ratings of that, just that segment was like the highest rated thing. I mean, PTI is always the highest rated thing on ESPN, as it should be. They were like, why don't, like, though this is the highest rated segment we do other than PTI as a show. Like, basically, it's like the joke of like, why don't we build the whole plane out of the black box? And they're like, okay, we can. And like, I mean, you've seen in the different sports media pockets, like, okay, you have Simmons and like a lot of the stuff they do at The Ringer, which is like, how can I blend pop culture and sports history and into sports coverage? And now his site, The Ringer, it's like a coaching tree of all the people who are Simmons acolytes. And Stephen A became so ubiquitous, and Skip Bayless became so ubiquitous for like this performative debate culture, that under ESPN's umbrella, there is absolutely a coaching tree of people who yell cockamamie things that are oftentimes disingenuous for the point of debate. And then you see that, like, I mean, obviously there's a million Barstool impersonators, there's a million Ringer impersonators, and so on and so forth. So it's like, I think that fissure in sports media happened between like TV and the internet, because SEO also has become such, search engine optimization has become such a big thing as stuff becomes direct to consumer. Like, I ask Cam sometimes how he sees stuff in those tweets and things like that. The things get populated are the things that are in from ESPN, Stephen A or Perk's voice. And so it becomes the algorithm starts rewarding the things that perform well. Stephen A's voice performs well. So that like really splits things into your little pocket. As far as like the two sides of sports media, I don't think that there's much room moving forward for generalist talk. I mean, I'm sure there will be another Pardon My Take or Bill Simmons, people who can cover everything. But right now, I think we're in a space that's like, when it comes to up and coming people, it's like hyper specialized depth and expertise. Like, your niche on the internet, you better be an expert in it. Like, there's not much room without column writing for the generalist, the guy who goes into every locker room, who's been a beat reporter, who's talking about everything, to turn into Tony or Mike or Bill Simmons. That's really hard. Like, I know Pardon My Take has done that, and like, you know, that's out of a Barstool umbrella and they've turned into their own thing. And like, Big Cat and PFT are incredibly special talents to do that. But like, I don't know the next show that will like really transcend as a generalist sports show.
And you have the sort of sensational personalities, but you also have the nuts and bolts guys like Bill Barnwell. And who do you look for, or who do you look to for real down and dirty, just sports analysis and analytics, and not just the show?
So there are a few things. Like, obviously, like, I know Bill really well, and I read his stuff and Zach Lowe's stuff, and they're sort of the godfathers of that genre of putting GIFs and writing 2,000 to 5,000 words on something really specific in sports. For football, I really like a service called Just the Tape. You can check their YouTube channel out, and you can actually, it's not someone breaking down the tape, but it shows you an all 22 for every single draft prospects. This is the first year I really covered the draft in more depth on our show, Dominique Fox's show. You should listen to it. Subscribe after you listen to this podcast. It's the second best podcast on the internet after the show you're listening to right now. But Just the Tape, it shows you all 22 of the college people and like all of their plays that are of significance this season. So like, that stuff's good. I use Cleaning the Glass for basketball statistics to try and understand basically, you know, impact on the game stuff. And then when I'm reading stuff, Zach Cram's incredible. Rob Mahoney's incredible on basketball stuff. Football, honestly, the amount, like, I love Ben Solak. I know he's someone he got roasted for having a bad take on the tape of Josh Allen flipping his hips last year on his last throw in the playoff game. But like, in general, he's just excellent. Like, as good as he can get breaking down tape. He writes in a really clear and digestible way, because I don't know if you feel this, Cam or Riz. Like, one of the things people try to make football into rocket science. It's one of the things I appreciate the most about Dominique. They try to be like, whoa, 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 you don't know what you're watching. And objectively, we do. Like, it's not that hard. So it's really nice to have someone who's an expert who can show you the plays from the all 22, but also not talk down to you and make you feel like you're in you know, AP Calc. It's just like, dude, we're watching the Pats here. It's fine. I think I know that this 3rd-and-2 was created by the offensive line.
Yeah. You know, knowing Danny, growing up with Danny, working with Dominique, working in the professional sports, college sports business, do you feel differently about professional college sports, or do you feel differently about the athletes?
I feel like the athletes are way more normal. Like they're much like, I mean, but no, they're not normal physically. I've never felt less athletic than being around Danny or Dominique, where like things just come incredibly easy for them. I mean, they're much more normal people. Like, yes, they have like developmental differences of like how they enter, like they have way more confidence about being able to do things than normal people. Like they've developmentally haven't had the block of being like, oh, I can't do X, Y, and Z because those things come very easy to them. But the biggest thing is like, I think we look at a lot of athletes like they're sort of immune to pressure, immune to like chatter, things like that. Or we think of them as meatheads or football geniuses. And like a lot of them are just really normal people who happen to be freakishly athletic. Like, yeah, of course they're very dedicated, but it all starts with them hitting like the genetic lottery and them. But like the most part, so they're just like really normal. Like all of like, I've met now, you know, a couple dozen professional athletes through this stuff. And interacting with them, it's actually rare that they're like dismissive or assholey or think that they're better than you. Like that is more common with a random ESPN talent who thinks they're hot shit than it is a professional athlete who works for ESPN. Those people are just really normal and nice.
I mean, that's good to know. I mean, I've dealt with, and Cam knows, I mean, he's dealt with them too, a lot of professional athletes or collegiate professional athletes in our careers. So we know that it's a little different perspective for us because we're helping them get better and healing them. So they're very, you know, thoughtful back to us. But it's nice to hear that when they're in a different industry, working in a different career, that they seem to be, you know, doing the same thing and, you know, helping out or, you know, not being, like you said, an asshole or looking down on you, other than those personalities that think they are like the best things in sliced bread, right?
Totally. And like athletes are regimented and they're coachable too. Like I'm sure that's something from the, you guys notice with like giving them rehab exercises or like sending, like they're going to do the work and they're going to be on time for everything, which is like, Cam knows this. I'm always down to be like, hey, you know, maybe that wasn't your best take. Maybe you want to take that one back. And they're like eminently coachable for putting them in a good position to succeed, which is nice. And they're particularly football players. If you have a podcast starting at 9 PM, they're going to be there 8:50 sitting there waiting.
Yeah.
Like it's unbelievable.
Yeah. Yeah, and it goes back to I have a post. I don't know if Cam, if you've seen it at my office in Weston, I have a framed picture of Vince Lombardi, and it's just this basically the Bible of Vince Lombardi, like his writing that he had done, and basically it says if you were, you know, 15 minutes early, you're on time. If you're on time, you're late, and if you're 15 minutes late, it's unacceptable. So athletes, I think, feel that when they know that they need to be there, prepare ahead of time, which is nice that they actually. They're always there, always ready. I have a story of, so when I was in 2007, I'd helped a colleague of mine cover some Bruins practice as well. It was the Olympics year and all the pro hockey players or whoever was going to the Olympics was leaving for Italy. And I had to go and cover some practices up in Wilmington. So I go up and, you know, there's a few players that I had to see and do rehab with. And a couple of the guys, I was supposed to be there at 7 a.m. and I get roll in at like 10 minutes to 7, and there's one of the guys is standing there with a coffee, and he's like, Riz, where you been? Like, what are you talking about? 10 minutes to 7. He's like, I've been here since 6:30. Like, they're grinders. Like, they want to be there. They want to get their stuff in. They understand it. Like, so that's what athletes, they're, you know, they're made, they're cut from a different cloth compared to people that, and even though you think they're given everything in their life, which a lot of them are, they're very appreciative when you're doing something for them, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, 100%.
As far as sports coverage, when you were growing up as a kid and what you saw as a kid watching ESPN, how does it differ now in the industry you're in now? What's better? What's worse? Things that you've seen, where you think it's going in the future?
I mean, ESPN is still the biggest fish in the pond, but like that pond's expanded immensely. Like it's no longer a monolith in the way it was where, you know, before, if you had talent, you wanted to work with ESPN, they had all the best broadcasters. All of like SportsCenter had a lot more personality and mattered a lot more before the internet made those things get their highlights in a different way. And you had everyone like, I mean, if you look at ESPN from when we were growing up, like I read Simmons religiously, I think from like the beginning of high school on. And like the writing was, I know Kornheiser and Wilbon were at the Washington Post, which was a huge part of me growing up too, and then ended up at ESPN. Because I grew up in Washington, D.C., and that was my local paper. But like, I don't know if there's a world where network is going to have everyone like that, where you're going to have Stuart Scott and Scott Van Pelt and Russillo and Levitard and Simmons and the best broadcast team. Like, that almost seems impossible. Like, it's going to be really spread out. I wish I had a better answer of the future, because I would definitely bet on one of those micromedia companies and join as quickly as possible if I knew which ones are going to pop. But I think that, like, so much of this is that it's a really saturated market. And like, I'm thinking of the last show that really popped that was new, and like, that was New Heights, the Kelce show, which went crazy. And like, so largely because of Travis dating Taylor Swift. Not that they're fucking great. Both the Kelce brothers are so charming and have seemingly limitless stories and have so much chemistry interacting with each other and with Kylie, Jason's wife, on that show, that like, it's, I'm not saying it's not great, it's just that, like, that popped for very different reasons. Honestly, like, where it's going, I think it's just going to be really optimizing a bunch of personal channels. Like, the personalities are going to be the channel. They're going to have their own YouTube pages, create more general shows. The one thing that's very noticeable is digital video for the first time. For the last 10 or so years, it's been all about podcasts. And now we're seeing a move to digital video in a way that's really interesting, because the yo-yo towards sort of some TV sensibilities is something that's appealing to the viewer is coming back. So that would be my big prediction for the next 5 years, is that digital video becomes increasingly important, and people are going to try and get shows direct to the consumer in ways that are new and inventive. And that could be Netflix getting into sports podcasts and having a video component, or people doing it on their own.
What's the hardest thing for an industry leader like ESPN to stay ahead of the game? Like, what are you seeing, like, in your, like, fishbowl that to get you guys to the next, like you said, the next big thing? Like, what is it? Is it just the creative minds that are at the think tank trying to figure it out? Or, you know, are you guys pulling stuff off of, like, an algorithm to see what's hitting?
I think ESPN, like, for a long, one of the things that was difficult for a long time with talent retention was that television is zero sum. It's not an abundance model. So inherently, that there's a certain amount of hours in the day, a certain amount of slots to be on. To put someone new on, you have to take someone off. And so you had this door where ESPN would be like, okay, whatever, we can replace them with someone new. That has switched with the internet, where it's an abundance model. Like, people can do it on their own. But what's interesting, and at least in my theory, I don't run the financials of ESPN over the last 20 years, is that there's just places for people to go independent and just make more money in certain ways now. And I know that's changing. Stephen A. and Pat McAfee are making as much money as anyone in the industry. But my gut is that for a long time, like, someone like Bill Simmons or the Pardon My Take guys or Levitard or Cowherd or Dan Patrick or Rich Eisen going out independently and having, free market, like you wouldn't free agency, was able to generate significantly more money for them. And they were able to be crown jewels of different networks or gambling companies as sports gambling money as filtered into the media. So they're just suitors that are willing to pay for credibility that those guys were developed on air, and it's transferable because their fan bases have been with them for, in some of those cases, 20 years. Some of those people have been doing radio shows and podcasts for now since like 2007.
Why was McAfee so successful? I mean, he was a punter. He's a big punter. He's a funny guy, but he became incredibly popular over the past few years.
I have no idea. I honestly, like, I don't know if this is ESPN sacrilege. I've never listened to the show. I know he has Aaron Rodgers on there saying crazy. And Aaron Rodgers is like, I mean, if you wanted to ask me why Aaron Rodgers is still relevant, I couldn't give you an answer. I mean, he does incredible stuff with guest booking, and clearly makes guests really comfortable. Like, I've seen clips of him talking to like Caitlin Clark or Nick Saban, or he had LeBron on. And at certain points, the snowball rolling down a hill. Like, you make enough of those guests feel comfortable, more people go on your show to say things that they wouldn't say elsewhere. So that's what I got on that. Like, he clearly has an ability to be charming in front of a crowd and in front of different people. That's not a show I have a ton of experience digesting.
Yeah, makes sense. I was just curious, because anytime you turn on college television, he was always there in his tank top and his cowboy hat screaming about something.
Yeah.
I just remember him punting the ball 15 years ago for the Colts.
Yeah, it looks like a lunatic. But Cam, that's gonna be like you and I with our professional production company, right? It's gonna blow up.
Yeah, but
like,
I'm gonna wear a shirt with sleeves.
Well, yeah, that's fine. You might need to wear some cowboy boots though.
You'll never catch me in a cowboy hat.
I would love to see sleeveless Cam Rock and a cowboy hat on this show.
Cowboy. Yeah. Depends on who ends up sponsoring us, and we'll see.
That's correct. If we get like Remington or somebody, the ammunition company, that will put like cowboy hats and wear sidearms.
Oh, Kravitz, I want to ask. So you and I probably have talked about this for the past decade, but do sports matter as much as they used to? Like, we've got the four major sports, and you can even include the MLS. But with our attention so fragmented everywhere, do sports matter like they did 25 years ago? Do they matter more?
Football matters.
What's the deal with viewership, and how are some of these leagues surviving?
Football matters more, period. It's become like, we had like that little period when there was the concussion data in the NFL. We found out the NFL had lied to players. We're like, the NFL's bad. It's going to be gone in 10 years. And then we all
just got stronger.
Yeah. We all sort of tacitly were like, okay, these guys now know what they're signing up for. We know what we're signing up for. We're watching the car wreck. And like, I mean, I don't think football has lost a bit. I think the product is better. I think ironically. So I think that certain sports, like the NBA, is in a really weird place now. I know this has been like the ratings discussion, but like the quality of the product overall has actually been hurt by analytics, where like watching a regular season game and guys just jog 3-point line to 3-point line, throwing up 63s a game. Sorry to your Celtics, the Sula Bowl.
Yeah.
Like the grossest
version of it. We'll talk about Tatum later.
Yeah. It's the grossest version of it. But I don't think the games matter as much for that or for baseball, which has become, really regional. Football is ubiquitous. Like, I can't imagine, like, people know the NFL, they know their teams, they know they watch every single week. And the product, because there's so many moving pieces, it's not the analytics, like everyone just take corner threes. It's not the analytics, like three true outcomes in baseball where it's strikeout, fly out, home run. The analytics are like, go for more fourth downs, be more aggressive, throw the ball more. And it's made the game significantly closer to the way that we played Madden as kids. And like, that's great. The viewer, like the product's better than it's ever been.
But don't you think the NFL players are better than they've ever been?
Oh yeah, for sure. They're incredible. Like and the depth at all these positions is like, I mean, like, I don't think these guys are better than Brady or Manning or Breeze, like the top quarterbacks. I mean, Mahomes, Allen, Lamar are ridiculous. They're in that tier. But the average level, those guys are incredible now. Like, you don't have slow receivers. You don't have incomplete players. You don't have linebackers who can't drop into coverage. Like, the Bucs dropped 350-pound Vita Vea to be a coverage linebacker in spots. Like, can you imagine Tony Siragusa doing that for the Ravens 20 years ago? It would have looked insane. And this guy's just, like, moving. He's moving well.
Now, do you think the NFL, I mean, the way I look at it is it seems like the fan just wants to see carnage and gladiators and, you know, that's why football is so successful, do you think? And, you know, MMA and, you know, they just want to see the biggest hit. They want to see, you know, somebody, you know, they want to see the big pass and the big catch. But it seems like you like alluded to a minute ago, like it's a car wreck every single play.
Yeah.
So you think that's what's the driver? Is that the big thing? People just want to see that? Is that they're bloodthirsty almost? It's like that movie Bloodsport.
I think it's
back with Jean-Claude Van Damme.
I think it's definitely possible. I also think like football like weirdly fits the attention span now. It's like watch for 4 seconds, you get a break. Like it's so easy to follow up. Like watching it's harder if you want to break down what happened. Like, oh, how'd they beat cover two here? But like the basic understanding and the TV product, like football's better to watch on TV than to go to the game.
Yeah.
Baseball and basketball are the exact opposite. Like if you can sit close to a basketball game, it's like you don't even notice you have your cell phone in your pocket. You're like, look at these guys. This is unbelievable. Yeah. If I'm watching basketball on TV, half the time I'm just scrolling Reddit or Twitter.
Yeah, whatever. Right.
Where football is just like incredibly easy to watch. And the hits and the highlights, like there is definitely like a human cockfighting element to it. It'd be, I'd be crazy to deny that that's part of it.
Now, I've never been to an MMA fight, but how is that as far as a spectator sport? Where does that fall in the realm of professional sports?
I think it's huge. I mean, I'm in the MMA is in my McAfee zone too, where like I get that it exists, but like it just feels, that one actually feels too brutal for me. Just seeing someone get like clearly knocked unconscious, do the fencer position, and then get punched in the face like 8 more times till the referee pulls them off. I'm like, this feels a little bit weird to me. It's like less, it certainly seems less artistic than boxing. Because I used to love watching like the, you know, big fights back when like Floyd would fight Pacquiao or whatever.
I noticed you've left out one of the four major sports. That's the National Hockey League for those who are unfamiliar. Actually, DC has a team. It's the Capitals, if you didn't know, Charlie. So it's your opinion in the NHL.
I think the NHL is doing better. And it seems like the ratings are up with that. I mean, they had the greatest all-star game transformation of like any league possible. And I thought that the overtime of the rubber match between Canada and the USA, I guess it's the final because they played in the group stage ahead of it, was like up there for one of the most compelling 30 minutes of sports television I can remember. It felt like a NBA Finals game 7, like when the things grind, when it grinds to a halt, and seeing McDavid come through was like very, very cool. So, I mean, hockey's honestly, I think, more similar to baseball, where like it's unwatchable on TV in the regular season. But the playoffs are unbelievably intense. Like the anxiety induced by hockey during the playoffs is pretty much unmatched by any sport. Like it feels like the goals are so valuable.
Yeah. I mean, I would agree. I think it's regional as well.
Yeah. But like, I can't imagine sitting down and being like, I'm watching like 82 Caps games this year. Like that's just
people do it.
Oh, I know.
They're diehard. It's like watching the Red Sox for 160 games, like, or 62. Like, who does that? Yeah, wait till playoff season comes. That's when the most exciting part of the year is.
Yeah.
Since we hit a little bit on carnage and what happens in sports, let's shift gears a little bit and talk about injury reporting, because I love this. This is like in our wheelhouse and in the athlete themselves. So we might as well start with Jason Tatum because, you know, Tatum, as you know, blew out his Achilles the other night. And everybody's like, ooh, what happened? Even in my clinic, we're looking at the video the next morning and I didn't watch the game. I didn't realize it was his right foot. Mm-hmm. I looked at his left foot and it looked like he came off his toe and he kind of went off the side of his foot. And I'm like, he might have a Liz Frank fracture. Like I was just looking at it. And then someone goes, no, it's his right leg. And they had a different angle and we see it. And us as professionals could pick it out like anything. And then, you know, everybody's speculating. So where do they draw the line in the media to get information and be able to deliver the information, because I know that the organizations can only release so much. But is it someone like that's like on the inside that's like, hey guys, listen, this is what the inside scoop is, or
no,
how does that work? Are you guys confined to what you can release versus what's really true versus what's fact or fiction?
So maybe Shams or Schefter has more information that we don't know, but yeah. Like someone like us, so like you hear rumors from time to time. Like I've worked with Dominique long enough where he's like, hey, this is what's actually going on. This is what's being reported. It could be anything. It could be someone out for something. He's like, actually, this is like a personal issue between so-and-so and so-and-so on the team rather than injury. I mean, I think that really has changed the sports gambling becoming legal, where these leagues are really pushing honesty. And you saw that with the 49ers getting fined for the way that they reported Christian McCaffrey's Achilles tendonitis last year. And they said he was going to be ready for week one. And it totally shifted the betting market on their over-under and stuff like that. So like, honestly, like what gets you in, I think unless you're really in the know with the team or the player, like most of the people in the sports media are taking it as face value because the teams don't want to get fined for the league, the enormous amounts. Now that might have been different 10 years ago, but at that point I wouldn't have had, you know, any access to knowing exactly how different it was. I know hockey is a little bit different and individual sports are very different as well. Like the tennis and golf thing, because they can just pull out of the tournaments and not explain why. You can just say upper body or lower body, but the NFL and the NBA are now so specific about how they report stuff for gambling.
Yeah, because I noticed that in hockey, and Kim, you probably have a lot more to say about this, but they always report it as an upper or lower body injury, like you said, like with hockey. There's never a specific with hockey. And I don't know if it's because of if it's the Players Association that has an agreement with the organization or with the media or how that works, but it always amazes me to hear it. But we have people that we know that it's sometimes they might give you a little tip here and there. But I think the big thing, it's interesting that, you know, you mentioned Schefter. It's like he always has an inside scoop on everybody and he's the first one to release everything that comes out. And I'm like, how's that guy get all this information? And it's interesting how he comes out with it. But I think it's like 99.9999% correct all the time.
He does really well. Like, and he showers with his phone.
Yeah.
I'm not kidding.
Doesn't everybody?
Well, like he's like, it's just, he is not a second where he's not with his, like his phone in his hand, ready to get information and turn it around. And you see that in tweets, obviously, because they're like during free agency, you could tell that some of them are sent by agents and it doesn't have like proper punctuation or capitalization. It's like, Bartlestein sent this one where nothing's capitalized and he doesn't use periods, like, and Schefter reposted it. But like, no, he's pretty good about sourcing his information and backing it up and getting it out quickly.
Yeah, like, oh, Cam, like, if you get a call from Charlie, like, hey, what's going on with this White Sox pitcher, man? Like, how are you confined by the organization? Like, I'm assuming most people
would say, hey, this is what happened. And
put 500 on the nation. Put 500 on the cuffs.
No, of course not. Although they did just lift the Hall of Fame ban for Pete Rose.
Yes, which is amazing. Yeah, after he died. I mean,
yeah, Shoeless Joe Jackson.
Yeah, Shoeless Joe.
Who is a White Sox.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, no, I mean, like, I think that, like, in sports media, you hear more rumors about like personal stuff than you do about the injuries. Like you hear about rifts and teams like, oh, that guy actually got traded because of XYZ.
Yeah.
So that's the type of thing. Like there were like an example of that is like I don't think any of them were true, but like you hear like a dozen rumors. Like when Steph Diggs got traded, it was like, oh, there's X, Y, and Z rumor about him and Josh Allen. And you hear it's like someone calls you, is like, this is what really happened. Like I know so-and-so's agent. And for me, I end up like tossing out most of them because like, I don't think that a lot of the people on sports TV actually have the inside sources to know the people's personal lives. Like maybe if you're Charles Barkley or Stephen A. or Simmons, you have like a better sense of that because you actually talk to those guys. But like that's the stuff you hear more than the injury stuff.
Is there pressure on, you know, you, the media, to speculate any of these things to get something out quick? Or is it, you know, there's too little respect for medical privacy? Like, how does that work?
I actually think people hate when like gas bags speculate about injuries is my take on it. Like, because they're like, you're not a doctor. Like,
right.
I can lie. Like, and like, I even think people like a lot of, like, there's that Twitter guy, Dr. Chow. He was like, vulgus mechanism ACL torn. I could tell from like 7,000 feet away from this still frame. And you're like, okay, Chow. Like, whatever, dude. Yeah.
There's a bunch of Twitter doctors now. Yeah. Even amateur Twitter doctors who never went to medical school or did residency.
Exactly.
Yeah, there you go.
But so I think that like when you hear someone who's like on a sports TV show, like trying to identify an injury, they just come off like such a D-bag that like generally I advise against, like, hey, man, maybe you shouldn't say that you think it's this injury. You really have no clue.
How much of the content on these websites and apps is just fluff? Because if you log on to ESPN in the middle of the day, you know, half the articles are Celtics are, quote, disappointed by their effort, or Shedeur Sanders is elated to be in Cleveland. I mean it's so obvious, right?
That's just AP stuff. Those are just AP stories that are just... It's just an evolving front page. Like, unless it's unless it's like the center scroll or something that's written up by like a real reporter, the AP stuff is just, oh, here's your daily digestive news for the last 4 hours. The news cycle just moves faster now. So you want to keep up with the things that are at the top of your news feed and give you the AP write up on that. So like, I guess it's fluff. It's more just like, not just filler. It's just like, it's an expanded tweet.
So since we touched on Pete Rose, why don't we shift gears and talk about gambling? Cam, do you have any questions on gambling? As you know, I see a lot of kids at the high school where they talk about, you know, FanDuel and all the other gambling platforms. And how is media? I mean, ask the question. I can see the wheels turning on the gambling.
Gambling is huge now, right?
Yeah.
We have the extrapolation of the Barstool umbrella. Now, in the past, Roger Goodell was totally against gambling. Obviously, no, he's for gambling, completely two-faced, as we know. FanDuel and DraftKings are everywhere.
Yeah.
How does it influence sports going forward? We talked a little bit about injury, but
I mean,
does it affect your media coverage? Because on these shows, you'll see these amateur people put up lines and then make a prediction that the Chiefs are going to win by 30. And does any of that really matter?
Yeah, I actually do think it matters. I think handicapping matters. So there's a lot here. Because this is broken down a lot for the media stuff. Yeah, I mean, there's some of these betting people are quote unquote sharps who are like, I can win you money. I'm up this amount of units. Some of the people are awesome. Like the people who do daily fantasy, and like, this is when you get like in a deep silo of nerd stuff. And you're like, I'm on a Twitch stream with this guy who's showing me that he's up 100 units this year betting on like this type of stuff. And I also think it's like harder to generally win in sports gambling now that it's more ubiquitous. Like I had a coworker who supplemented his income from like 2015 to 2020 by being early on daily fantasy sports. And he was like excellent about it. And he's incredible at fantasy sports. And he's like daily fantasy and like day-to-day betting now is impossible because everyone has the same information. There's so much of it. So that stuff, like, yeah, it's a huge suck for like kids shouldn't be having access to bet all this stuff. It's a gateway to like getting your debt, like running up a massive tab on your dad's credit card if you're betting on FanDuel and thinking you're going to win. But as far as sports talk, like using odds and perceived odds and handicapping to help the analysis of games is incredibly helpful. Like it's basically saying like, okay, if I want to defend an argument or build on an argument, like bookmakers and prediction models, a lot of this are LLM models at this point that are building outcomes for this, no different than, you know, a hedge fund would for like a long position stock. If they're handicapping the Chiefs as having a perceived 64% chance of winning the AFC championship game against the Ravens or the Bills or whoever, that's an important data point that should be brought into the analysis and being like, is the data what you're seeing? Like, this is one of the things I ask Dominique all the time. I'm like, here are the perceived odds. Does that match up with how you look at the tape? And if it's yes, that's something that's important to be like, I actually think that they have a better chance to win than that. If it's less, or like, I don't agree with this, X, Y, and Z. It's like, it's a really good conversation starter.
Does that translate into the locker rooms as well?
That's the third bucket of that. For players, we're going to have a massive gambling scandal at some point. Like, the NFL has really quietly suspended people, and they're lucky that it hasn't been the biggest people. Someone's going to get popped for betting on this in an incredibly negative way. Like, it's going to be Connie Hawkins, or was it the BU basketball team that had like a bunch of people suspended like the night?
I think it was. Yeah.
Like, we're going to get to that spot where, like, you know, someone is going to have a suspension that really derails their career because they are match fixing. And we've seen that, whether it's Juventus or BU basketball or Connie Hawkins, who I guess eventually was exonerated, but like, that's somebody who would have been the best NBA player of the 1950s and 60s before Russell Wilt. And like, he didn't get to play because of sports gambling and racketeering. Like, that is very on the table for some dipshit who's like, I mean, I guess we saw it with Jontay Porter, who was intentionally fading his own bets and like checking out of games and is going to prison. But there will be a big name person at some point in the next 10 years that makes us rethink, whoa, we should not have given athletes with an immense amount of money access to leverage this. And like, we almost saw that last year with Shohei Ohtani. Like, I know it was his translator, but like, there's millions of dollars. And if that had derailed the best baseball player since Babe Ruth, like, everyone, I think, would have taken a step back. I mean, like, I'm not sure this is a great idea.
Well, I always wonder, like, if when it's going to, like, the foot's going to drop with a lot of these, you know, you think of officiating and the outcomes of games, and people are scratching their heads, like, how did this game go to a game 7 when it should have been over in game 4? Like, you look at this stuff and you always wonder, and you like you said, something's going to happen. But I think the Ohtani thing was huge. Like, it was just a big eye opener for a lot of people. And me not being a gambler, like, I'm like, wow, that could be easy for a pro athlete, like, or someone that's actually in charge of the outcome of a game. So for me, I'm just like, wow, this could be very easy. And I can't understand how it hasn't been exposed at this point, when there's so much influence and so much ease of getting that outcome that it hasn't been revealed.
Yeah. I mean, I think that the only saving grace is that the star players in these sports now are making so much money. And I know that there will be athletes, and rightfully so, are like, we're still not getting a big enough share of the pot considering what owners are making. But like, you know, NBA players are going to start making $70, $75 million a year. Like, the top guys, the bottom guys are going to be around 12. And like, at a certain point, risking that for a parlay becomes insane. But I mean, it will happen at some point, and probably not in basketball again, but like in another sport where the finances aren't the same. But like, that's the only guardrail, is that you're hoping that these guys have too much to lose.
Do you think refereeing is worse than usual, or do you just think we have more information?
We have more information. Like, it's certainly not worse than the Tim Donaghy NBA. Like, if you go back and look at, I mean, obviously there's the famous Kings stuff. But if you look at like the 2006 finals, when we were actually fans, Cameron, like, when Dwayne Wade won his first title, this is not really a hot take here, that was disgusting. And so I can't say it was fixed, but if it wasn't, then it was the worst refereeing you'll ever see. Like, Wade getting 25 free throws a game to flip a series when he's not getting touched is insane. And we know it's refs who are tied to Donaghy and stuff. So like, I generally think it hasn't gotten any worse. And like, Hawkeye's incredible. Like, the Hawkeye they'll bring to football, like, that type of stuff should make reviews better and better. Like, the sport that's gotten it the best and used it the best is tennis, where it's like, it's not seamless. It's on clay surfaces. And I know they're a tenth of a millimeter is the margin of error. And like, so there are some calls that are wrong, but like, that stuff is going to start going to hockey. It's already in soccer. It's going to come into the NFL with first downs and stuff. Basketball with out of bounds or who touched it last. Like, that technology is going to make reffing better and better.
Yeah, I mean, because I think the playoffs last year, watching the NFL, I'm like, how do they get the ball placement wrong with the technology that's out right now? It's like, how does this even happening, where it was clearly over the line and now it's behind the line? Like, where did there's 17 referees in the field, and you got Ed Hockley in the booth. Like, what the hell's going on here? So it'll be interesting to see kind of that the future with the, you know, Markelis stuff is awesome.
Yeah, I mean, that's it cost the Bills a trip to the Super Bowl. It's crazy.
Yeah, 100%. Cam, what do you got?
Oh, Kravitz. Who's your favorite current athlete and why?
The one I like to watch the most, or the one I'm most interested in their story?
One of each.
The one who I currently enjoy watching the most is probably Stephen Curry still. Like, I think it's like it's the most like unique thing that he's still doing this. And it's the most, I don't know when we'll see. We're going to see a series of impersonators, but he's the stuff he can do with the basketball, no one is even, I mean, I know Jokic is incredibly skilled, but it's different. Like what Curry does, he's the most skilled basketball player in NBA history, and it's not particularly close. And like him being able to be a star player amplifies everyone around him. Like the games when you see Steph get hot, I still think that's the best show in sports. The story that I'm most interested in right now is probably the development of Carlos Alcaraz, the tennis player. He's 22 and he's, you know, number two in the world. Just because he's, I mean, he's a total artist. He's like, you know, the most talented guy since Federer. He's probably, if you had like to pick the athletic package of anyone across sports, of like you would build an athlete that could do anything, he's at the top of the list of those guys. But there's just like a complete wildness to him that like he will do anything on any shot. He has not been tamed by like making the smart decision yet. That I think is like, it's spectacular. Like seeing him play on grass or clay, like he is going to do something that no other tennis players even ever thought of doing. And he's on track to be like long-term. It'll be interesting to see if someone who is that wild in their on-court decision-making, not, he seems like a totally normal person off the court. Like his talent-wise, he should be the best player ever. He should be there with Djokovic, Nadal, and Federer. But it's a question of like, can you be that if you aren't like an efficiency monster who's trying to kill everyone in your path? So that's like an amazing, like over the next 10 years, that story will become more and more significant.
You know way too much about sports. My head's going to explode, I think. Cam warned me before we got on this call. Like, he's like, you're going to be amazed. I'm like, I don't even know who that tennis, I don't even know anything about tennis. And like, now I want to watch tennis because he's talking about this guy.
You'd love it. It's like, he's got the Curry Tiger Woods thing where you're like, I didn't even know it was possible to try that.
It's crazy. I do want to talk about college, but I'll leave that out for now. Cause I have some questions about what your thoughts are on college sports. But Cam, do you have a follow-up to that about his favorite player?
Who's your favorite athlete ever, Kravitz? And who's the most overrated athlete of all time?
Ooh, I like that question. I like it.
Favorite athlete ever?
I like the overrated one. I want to hear the
discussion we've been having for 20.
I mean, the most overrated athlete ever is Kobe. No question.
5 championships?
Yeah, but his fans think he's LeBron or Jordan, and he's not. Like, you're the best player on one finals team. One of your 5 championships. And like, you played the game the wrong way. And now you have all these sycophants who are like, mama mentality means like jacking up shots. And like, that's not, mama mentality was like being a ruthless competitor. And obviously he's an all-time great player. But the concept of, you're going to think I'm nuts for this. Cam probably knows this. I keep a list of how I rank the 23 best basketball players of all time. And I have Kobe at 12th on that list.
I'm going to ask you another question after that, but I love it. I want to see the list. You got to send it to me.
Definitely. And favorite athlete of all time? Let's go Jaden Daniels. It's changed my life.
Come on.
Jaden Daniels.
All right, Charlie.
How watching guy.
Charlie, you have to tell Riz the story. I know. So Charlie has this story. It went viral during the NFL playoffs this winter, but you have to share the story with all of us.
Okay. So I'm flying to New Orleans for Super Bowl Media Week. And I'm at DCA and I'm working and I'm sitting there, get the flight pretty early. I start boarding my flight and I look at the people boarding first class and I see this dude. He's wearing like all black sweats with his hood up and he's got like a shiesty, like one of the things pulled up over his face. And he's got a yellow Louis Vuitton Commander's bag and he's got like 6'4", 180. I was like, Jaden, I know it. So I board the plane and he's sitting in the front row of first class. His mom's next to him. He's got the shiesty pulled up and I point at Jaden as I board him, like, Jaden, to his mom. His mom gives me the thumbs up, like, don't make a scene. We're at DC. Like, this guy's, you know, the best football player in the history of your franchise. And so I just lean over. I'm like, Jaden, you changed my life. And he bursts out laughing. He gives me the thumbs up. And I don't think anything of it. I get off the plane. His mom gives me their media contact. And so I don't think anything of it. And I my phone starts blowing up the Thursday of Super Bowl week. And Jaden had gone on McAfee and they asked him what the funniest fan interaction he ever had was. And he was like, well, on the plane down here, some random guy came up to me and said that I saved his life.
I love it.
I was like, all right, that's fine. I was like, I saved your life just as good. So you saved my football life, Jaden.
That's great. I love it. Let me ask you this question. LeBron, Jordan. Everybody debates this.
You're torturing me.
Yeah. LeBron or Jordan?
I've gone back and forth on this many times. It's LeBron.
Charlie, you know.
Really? I'm not a LeBron guy. I'm a Jordan guy. Sorry.
No, I think Jordan's got the greatest highlights. He did more in less time, but like the degree of difficulty in the league for LeBron is so high.
For now.
He's the most complete player ever.
What would you say if Jordan was playing now?
He'd be
like, how would he compare?
I think he would. I mean, in the current NBA, I think he'd average 40 a game.
Yeah.
Sure. For sure. I also think that LeBron would demolish the 80s without the hand checking and like the way that it was played close to the basket. Like, ironically, I think both of them would have been better in each other's eras. Which is, but like, I mean, it's so crazy because they're so clearly the two best players ever. Like when people try and put someone else in the debate, I'm like, nah, man, like I watched the whole LeBron experience. It's a joke how good he is. And like what he did in 2016 and then the 2018 playoff run, even though they lost, like his highs outside of the Jordan stuff, which I wasn't totally cognizant of while it was happening. Like the LeBron highs are a joke of how good he was. It still is. I mean, he's 40.
It's amazing. I can't believe he's been in the league as long as he's been in the league. But it's nuts. Can I ask a question about college sports? Is that okay?
Yeah, of course.
How has the NIL helped or hurt college sports? This has been a huge debate. We talk about it all the time at work. And I have a, just to give you a little, what my perspective is that I think athletes should get, I always felt like they were getting an education as part of their like signing for a team or for a college. But I also see how much money the colleges are making off that athlete. So I kind of see both sides of it. But what's your thought on that? Is it better or worse for the NCAA?
Worse for the NCAA, better for the players. Like I'm glad that these players were not doing the sham that this is amateur sports and the guys can't get paid. The downside is it sucks for the fans. Like rosters can't be built. There's no continuity. Right. There's no rivalries. We've also sacrificed everything for the cash cow college football. And in doing so, like these mega conferences have made college football worse. It's like the product objectively. In the transferring, it's impossible to follow. We've bastardized college basketball to the point that like the tournament, no one knows who's on what team. It's way harder to follow. And we did it in the name of college football. Like we're going to make this ultra competitive product. And I thought this year of the expanded playoff was like the lowest quality college football playoff I can remember. Part of that is bad odds that there wasn't a dynamic quarterback this year, period, in the playoff. Like it's like, oh, let's get excited for Drew Aller and Will Howard. Which no one's going to. It's obviously different if you have Caleb or Jaden or Johnny Manziel or any great college quarterback. But no, I think from the viewer perspective, the NILs, I mean, I don't know how you totally get you can't get the toothpaste back in the tube and the kids could be played. But there have to be some rules that you can actually have a carryover roster year over year so that there's a decent product for fans. Because like now it's impossible to follow.
But you think the action, at least in college football, has degraded? I mean, the expanded college football playoff, yes, there were some bad games, but there were some excellent, exciting games, putting, you know, teams like Ohio State or the Texas ASU game was sensational. Right?
Yeah. It was a good game.
You're taking, you know, Arizona State, who no one in New England knows anything about, and you're putting Cam Scatabo on a national stage and Quinn Ewers and all these guys and making it a sensational event, even though you may not know the names of the players. Do you think the quality is worse?
Yeah, I think quality is worse because there's a team building year over year. Like if someone doesn't get on the field, they just leave. There's fewer program identities, fewer rivalries. Like I think that in general, like there's going to be exceptions to this. And like the good games are going to be great because there are super teams and super rosters. But yeah, I think the aggregate, the quality has gone down because of NIL. And I should say it's because of NIL. It's because of transfer. It's because of the portal.
The portal. Yeah.
The NIL, like the paying the players, like great. Pay them as much as you want to. Like it's the portal. It's the way that you can just bounce at any point if you are just trying to maximize getting on the field or earnings and that stuff. And I don't know what the fix is. I don't want guys to be stuck. Like the coaches can leave whenever. So I don't have like a solution for it, or I'm sure the NCAA would have thought of it already. But yeah, there's no traditional team building in college sports anymore at all across the board.
I think there was a great write up, I think, is why Saban left football, is because him and his wife, and I could be wrong on this story, but I from what I heard was the reason why he left college football is because his wife and him used to take the freshmen in and then bring them in and they would mentor them as they came in. And that was their thing. They wanted to coach them throughout their whole career and make them young men and have them have value, right? And understand kind of what it's like to be, you know, part of a family when they're away from a family. And then this happened. And that's one of the reasons I heard that he was getting out. Now, Charlie, you probably have better information, but that's one of the reasons why I heard he was leaving.
Oh, yeah.
And I could see that happening with other coaches where they don't have that ability to mentor and coach.
I think that like Jay Wright, Nick Saban, Coach K, I mean, let's be honest. Part of it is their advantage was gone. They had the most money to pay kids under the table, and that part was gone. I do think like the game changed on them, and Saban and Coach K were like, we're getting out before we look like dinosaurs.
Yeah.
So I do think that's part of it.
Charlie, I know it's getting late on the East Coast and everyone's got to wrap it up, but I do have to ask you one final question. What's going to happen this year? UNC, college football.
I don't think Belichick coaches a game.
Wow.
I think the buyout after June 1 being $1 million, I don't think he coaches a single game.
Why do you think that is going to happen?
I think that he didn't get hired to NFL team because of the embarrassment of the situationship with Jordan Hudson. And I think that the amount of bad press that he's going to continue to bring as this story continues to unspool is going to be something where, whether it's Bill or the program, they're like, we're good here.
But the guy has survived devil's advocate and biased, obviously, but the guy has survived 25 years of bad press.
It's true.
But that's your hot take, Cam, right there.
Okay. We'll take it to Nick. Charlie Kravitz, absolutely sensational as always. We are so lucky to have you and to know you. And I can't wait to keep watching your career skyrocket to the top. Thank you for taking some time to join us. You're the man. I love you, buddy.
That was the best. Thanks, guys.
Charlie, thanks, man. I appreciate it. I wish I knew more about sports. Just because I work in sports and take care of athletes doesn't mean I know anything. So I'll have to brush up on my sports for our next discussion. Tennis is it. I'm going to watch and I'll report back.
Carlos Alcaraz, he's amazing. All right, guys, I got to hop off.
Thanks, Charlie.
Right, see ya.
See you, man.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to Behind the Sports Medicine Podcast. Follow us on social media, watch full episodes on YouTube, and check out our website.
The information shared on this podcast is for educational and informational purposes only and is not intended as medical advice. Please consult a licensed healthcare provider for guidance related to your specific situation. We'll see you next week.